And let's welcome our first speaker, Mindy S. from Tacoma, Washington.
I'm Mindy, I'm an alcoholic. And sex and relationships. You betcha. So, what I have for you today is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now in sex and relationships in my life. And that's all I know. So that's all I have to give you guys. I'm a little nervous. There's a lot that's about to come out. Growing up, I was boy crazy from the, like, kindergarten. My first crush was Nathan. And he was in the Boy Scouts, and he was really cute. And then I moved, and it was Alex. I'm not going to go through all of them. But, like, I remember for each grade level, like, what boy it was that was going to be the cute one that I wanted to be with. My legs are shaking. Also having to do with sex and relationships, sometimes. So, you're welcome. So, I was boy crazy my whole life, and also invisible to boys, which is a horrible, horrible combination. I went through a little ugly stage from second grade until graduation. It wasn't funny then. It wasn't. And then I went to college. And somewhere over that summer, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I came to believe that I was beautiful. And that's a great thing. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Unfortunately, I did not have the self-esteem to go along with that new belief that I was beautiful. I started drinking in college. I was a late bloomer. School was always very important to me because I wanted acceptance from everyone around me. And my parents let me know that that was expected of me. I can do well in school, so I will do well in school. And I did. And I went to college 5 hours away. I grew up in a little town called Stillwell, Kansas. I grew up the same people from second grade until graduation. So once I was Ugly Mindy, I was Ugly Mindy. Right? Yeah. I go to reunions now, though. So I go to college, and it's 5 hours away, and I don't know anybody, like no one. So all of a sudden, I could like reinvent this new self. So I moved to Oklahoma City. And I was walking across campus with my new roommate, who I had known for one day now. And there was this boy in front of us, and he was like, "Where are you going?" "Well, we heard there was a party at the Lambda Chi house, so we're going there." "No. Don't go to the Lambda Chi house. They're lame. Come to the Kappa Alpha house." Okay. So we go there. I met my first boyfriend that night. And we were together my entire freshman year of college. So, like, my first sexual experience was this man, and I wouldn't take it back. It was beautiful and special, and I don't know how many alcoholics that can say that. I don't think there are many. But I loved him, and it was special. And I got approval and validation and all of those nasty things that I didn't even know I was looking for, like, from this relationship. Like, all of a sudden, I could look at someone else and project this image that I was good enough, and he would like project that back to me. And as long as he wanted to be with me, I was good enough. And then we broke up, and I slept with half the Kappa Alpha house. Fuck the KAs, fuck him, I'll fuck all of them. So that happened. And it wasn't pretty. The next 3 years of college, I went from drunken one-night stand to drunken one-night stand while I had a very nice boyfriend in Iowa. And that is how my relationships went while I was drinking. I was a serial monogamist as far as you knew. Like, horrible. And I felt disgusting and horrible about it, but I needed somebody who wanted to sleep with me because that meant I was good enough. That meant that I was attractive. That meant that I had something to offer that somebody else wanted. And it took me a long time to figure out that that wasn't real. We tell ourselves lies. In our drunken stupor, in sobriety, we lie to ourselves to get by, and that was the skill that I had. Like, this is what I could do to change the way I was feeling, to feel good enough about myself so that I could get through my day. I could get drunk, find somebody, and sleep with them. Sometimes more than once, sometimes not. So both of the people on my four-step list, that's a funny joke. And so this continued all through my drinking. And then I met another man. So I broke up with the man from Iowa for a very nice young man who worked in a bar, because that was exciting and fun. And for 3 years, I increased the amount of drinking I was doing. I was introduced to all kinds of new substances that allowed me to keep drinking more. And I would leave my job, go get drunk, get kicked out of the bar at 2 or 3, or sometimes he worked at the bar, so we were there till 4 or 5, and be carried out. I can't tell you the number of times that I drove home and had no idea how I got home. Sometimes I left the bar with him. Sometimes I left with one of his friends. I slept with my boyfriend's roommate in their house. Like, whatever it took to make myself feel like I was worth something in your eyes, that's what I did. And I did disgusting, horrible things that that I can't take back, that I can't undo, that I can't unhurt the people that I hurt. And then I got sober. And I couldn't do those things to change the way I was feeling anymore. But I was still boy crazy. Like, every meeting I walked into was like, who's here tonight? And I did a little bit of dating in AA. And I didn't lie to people. And I didn't sleep with more than one person that didn't know about it. Sometimes that's as good, I mean, yeah, progress, you know? Sometimes that's as good as it gets. And I made a sex ideal. And it was not what I thought my ideal was going to be. I thought that I wanted to be that girl who could sleep around and just be cool and like, yeah, I sleep with who I want to sleep with because I can, and it's a good time, and I'm fun. I'm not that girl. Like, I want monogamy and a relationship and children and a family and a partner. Like, who knew? How normal of me. So I did some dating in AA. I met a very nice young man here in California. And he was nice to me. And he's a good man. Holy cow, here it comes. And he's a good man. And he loves all of me, the good and the bad. The horror stories that I've been speaking of, he knows and accepts and knows that I've moved past that. And he doesn't want a family. And for 3 years we were together and happy. But I decided that my ideals list is more important than this relationship. That God has big plans for me. And my ideals list is coming. I have an amazing, amazing love story. And it just hasn't happened yet. And that's hard when you think you've found it and you know that person who knows you inside and out and has grown with you in sobriety and supports and loves you. So we broke up, and I met another very nice young man in sobriety. Like, I met both the good guys in sobriety. Sorry, ladies, you're out of luck. I met a very nice young man after I broke up with that very nice young man. and we were dating. And we talked. He knew what happened with the other one. We all know each other. It's incestuous to date in AA. We all know everybody's business. So he wanted to know what happened. And we talked about what happened. And I want to have a family, and I'm a package deal. I come with future children. Right? So I moved on and started dating this nice young man. And I fell in love with him. And things were exciting and new, and he was a passionate partner, and we were playful, and we had fun. And one day I got sick, and nothing serious, just a little flu, but I'm vomiting at an AA campout, and all of his friends start teasing him, like, oh, gotta watch out, she's probably pregnant. Not pregnant. And he freaks out and decides that he doesn't want kids. Are you kidding me? We had this discussion before we started dating. I'm a package deal. I have a womb, and it's going to be useful. We talked about this after the end of my last relationship that was a good relationship that ended because he didn't want kids. And now I've fallen in love with you, and you're telling me, never mind, I don't want kids. He didn't know. I'm not angry with him. I'm very angry with the situation. Very angry. But God has big plans for me. I know this. And every time one of these painful relationships ends, one of these wonderful relationships ends painfully, I can look and see the growth that I've made and the person that I've become. And the person that I am today is different than the person I was 6 months ago, is different than the person I was 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when I was still out there doing what I did not want to be doing. And today I'm honest, and that's amazing. That is a miracle that I can be honest with you about who I am and what I've done and how I feel. Feelings are the hardest thing to be honest about because we lie to ourselves about them. I can't even tell you how I'm feeling. I have no idea, but I'm going to pretend that I'm okay. So the very nice young man that I met here in California and moved up to Washington with tells me that he was wrong, that he still loves me, and he wants to have a family. And I've moved on, and it hurts. I want to be with him. I want to be with him, but I don't. And he's a good, good man. And he's offering me everything I thought I ever wanted, and there's something missing. And it's a lesson that I've learned in sobriety, that I am strong enough, and my God is there with me, that I don't have to be in a relationship when I don't think it's right. I am a beautiful woman, and I am smart, and there is somebody out there who's going to share my amazing life with me. And it's an amazing life. Like, this is a whole lot of hard stuff, and we're talking about heartbreak. And through all of this, I have gotten into an amazing master's program, gotten my RN. I work at my dream job at a children's hospital, taking care of sick babies. And my life is amazing. And somebody very lucky is going to get to share that with me and raise a family with me. And my God is going to hold my hand through all of these lessons and bring me out a better person on the other side, ready for the relationship that's waiting for me. I wasn't ready yet. There's something that God has for me that I'm not ready for. And I have an amazing love story. And I can't wait to find out what it is. That's what I got.
Thank you, Mindy. And let's welcome our second speaker, Dylan C. from Berkeley, California.
Thanks, Nate. I'm Dylan. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Mindy. That was really, really good. Welcome to the conference. Thanks to the host committee for putting this party on. Amazing weekend already. It's great to be asked to do this. And welcome everyone from out of town. It's great to have you here. I'm gonna talk about the book. I'm gonna talk about my experience with the topic and the steps. I qualify for this panel, I suppose. I got sober in 1998. I've 13 years sober. I married a girl that I met in the program 5 years ago, and we have a 2-year-old son today, and live across the bay over in Berkeley. And we managed to be sober and happy at the same time. And that's something I never thought was possible when I got to AA. I was certain that I had given up life to get sober, and that there was a choice. You could either be sober or happy, and luckily I was wrong through the steps and through you guys and through, you know, the AA way of life. We get to have this thing. I'm going to go ahead and just start off with the line in the book that says, we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. And so for me, the way that I'll tell that story is that when I was drinking, the last relationship I was in, when I was hitting bottom in the Mission District, 24th and Shotwell, was a girl that lived over at San Francisco State. And I made a decision. I don't know if any of you have ever made this decision, but I made a decision that I'd rather drink the way I want to drink than have people in my life. Anyone ever made that decision? Raise your hand. Sweet. And it wasn't like just one night I made that decision. It was like I sat down for a while and decided, like, do I want to live in a trailer in Tehachapi and drink the way I want to drink or have people in my life? And I decided on the trailer in Tehachapi, right? And so I went about hurting people to get out, you know, to find my way out, because it was too much pressure to try to drink and be in a relationship at the same time. And so I hurt her, and it says in the book, sweet relationships are dead. And when I finally hit bottom, you know, a year later, and got checked into rehab, I called her, and she was nice enough to clean out my apartment of all the, it was like a den of drugs and booze, and I was afraid that if I went back there sober that I wasn't going to make it. And she cleaned out my apartment for me, and she was a nice girl. And so I thought, here I am in treatment, and I'm lonely, and I thought, well, maybe it's a good time to get back together, right? And so, you know, I'm an a-hole, basically, right? And so I saw her a few times after that, and it didn't work out, you know, and good for her. She moved on with her life, and it wasn't meant to be. And so I went back to work after getting sober and having some time off, and I went back to my job, and there was a girl, that a coworker there, and she was a really nice girl, and she was not in the program, and she just sort of interested in what we were doing, and she was interested in me, and we started something really special. And so I had been a child. Like, I got sober when I was 26 years old, and I don't think I ever really became an adult because I was too busy getting loaded every day. And so I met this girl, and she, you know, AA at that time was teaching me how to live sober and how to grow spiritually and how to be of service and how to work the steps. And this person was teaching me how to get my hair cut and how to dress and how to wear a watch, you know, and how to treat a lady, right? You know, so I was getting growing up in AA, and it was really special. But her husband didn't think so, and. And I know it's a good joke or whatever, and I know that I get a laugh, but I'm not saying that because I'm really proud of what happened, but I'm saying that because we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. And we're able to screw up in AA, and we're able, our founders were not saints, and we are not saints. And we screw up, and we still get to be sober if we do this thing. And we continue to do this thing. What it says on you know, on page 69 and 70 is, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal. You know, and if I take these steps and find out what the chosen ideal is, and then I still screw up, am I sure to drink? And the book says, we don't think so. If we're willing to learn from our mistakes, and we're sorry for what we have done, and we have an honest desire to let God take us on to better things, we believe we will be forgiven, and we'll have learned our lesson, you know? And so that relationship sort of just came to its end. I think, you know, for her, she was having issues of her own with her marriage, and I was and I needed to move on, and I'd worked the steps just like Mindy was talking about with an ideal, and so I did this thing. And what it talks about in the book on page 69, when we do our fourth step, is it says we reviewed our conduct over the past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? So what we do in here, and the way that the steps were shown to me, is we take this inventory and we look at how we've treated relationships and sexual relationships in the past, and we find out what went wrong. And I did that, and I found out that I'd been a manipulator of relationships. I'd been selfish. I'd always been dishonest, and I'd always been dominated by fear. And so when I went to ask God to mold an ideal for my future sex life, it would only be logical to want to be in a relationship where I don't have to manipulate you, and I don't have to be dishonest with you. I don't have to be dominated by fear, and I can act less selfishly. And so I thought about that, and I thought, you know, this is probably what an ideal relationship would look like. And then we came from a line of sponsorship where you did that, and then you also did a little half-page, like, creative writing workshop on how you saw that, or creative writing project on how you saw that happening. And some people took it pretty far, you know, and made a little fantasy out of it. And I just wrote it down, what I thought. And lo and behold, that relationship with that woman ended, and I met my wife, you know. And sure, I met her at the clean and sober house I was managing. scandalous. We weren't real into the no relationships in the first year down in Redwood City, but we thought, well, if you work the steps, as long as you work all 12 steps, you could get into a relationship, was how we did it. And it didn't, you know, this relationship didn't work out, didn't necessarily work out on the first pass, and she got to go on and work the steps with her sponsor and become a member of the fellowship. She's got 10 years now in NA and in Al-Anon, and I'm really proud of her. And she's a great mom, and we have a great life. And so what happened with that, and the reason why I want to talk about, you know, this topic in particular, with the boy meets girl on AA campus, is how do you do that? You know, how do you do this thing? Because obviously there's going to be some hooking up this weekend, and there's going to be some hooking up at your home group, and there's going to be some hooking up in your town, and there's going to be some hooking up in your clean and sober house that you're managing or not managing. By the way, I was very ethical as that manager. I waited till I had moved on. You know, how do we do this thing? You know, because it can really go bad. And it can really, and there's just, you hear a lot of this, like, oh, we broke up, we had to divide up our meetings. You know, there's all sorts of trouble that can happen, you know, and you know, if you want to stay together, I can't help you. I just am not, I don't have that much power. You know, all I have is my experience. I've been very involved in AA since I got sober, and not quite so involved since we've had a 2-year-old son running around. And it's you know, we have to adapt in here. This is a marathon and not a sprint, and we do what we can. I'd spent, you know, 8 years being Mr. AA, and I hung out with a bunch of people that did AA right, and that implies that you're doing AA wrong. and so we knew how to do AA, you didn't. We were doing the right service, you were doing the wrong service. We were going to make it, you won't, you weren't, and if you didn't do it our way, you're probably going to get drunk and die. And we would tell you so. In just sometimes exactly like that. And so here I have this girl, and here's me, and I'm Mr. A, and I know how to do everything, right? And by the way, I don't believe this anymore. I've grown in AA, and I know that people stay sober all different ways. And people that have three times as much time as me do AA their own way, and they try to do it, and they work at it, and they try to carry the message to somebody else, and they get to stay sober too. And I don't feel this way the way that I did at the time. But I knew that you had to be on this beam. And my future wife was not on the beam. She did things a little differently. And so when you're just dating, that's no big deal. You know, you're really just trying to like get home and, you know, hook up, right? It doesn't really matter what the program's going on with this other person, right? But then I found out that I actually had feelings for this person, and we started to get closer, and one day it hits me. Oh my God, Julia doesn't do things exactly like we do. She's not exactly on the beam. Oh my God, Julia's gonna get drunk and die. And I went to my home group, and I find one of my sponsees, and I corner him, and I start sobbing. And I'm like, he's like, what's the matter with you? I go, Julia's gonna get drunk and Julia's gonna die, you know? So then I find my sponsor, and he's like, what's wrong with you? I said, Julia's gonna get drunk, Julia's gonna die. And you know, I said those things, and it all came out, and nothing came of it. Those guys didn't have any good answers for me. And the next morning I woke up, and I went on with the rest of my life. And she has 10 years sober, and we have 5 years married, and we have a 2-year-old son. You know, things are okay. And she gets to work the program that she works, and I get to work the program that I work. And maybe that was part of what changed my mind about who gets to make it in here and who doesn't. Because I don't get to decide, and I certainly don't know. And I certainly can't judge, and I certainly can't, tell you what's right and what's wrong. I know what I did to stay sober. I help guys stay sober. I ask for help when I need help to stay sober, and that's it. So what we did is there was a couple conversations that we had that, you know, just for the sake of the topic, because one of them was we decided early on that we can't really comment, or I shouldn't say comment, we can't really coach or tell each other how to work the program. We don't do things like you should really call your sponsor, or we don't do things like you should really go to a meeting, or we don't do things like it seems like you have a resentment, maybe you should write about it type thing. Like, we don't really, like, that seems like a good way to start a fight. But what we do is we love each other unconditionally, and we know, and so we did this thing where we made that decision, and then we got even more serious and we got engaged. And I remember thinking, well, this is going to be interesting if she goes out and shoots dope while we're married, right? So what we did is we said, well, we were very realistic about what the statistics are around here. The average in AA is drunk. Okay, so that means that we have to do more than the average. We have to do more than we're seeing other people doing, or else we'll be the average. It's only by doing the average that keeps the average so incredibly low, right? And so luckily I saw her doing more than the average, and so I felt comfortable, you know, doing this thing. But we promised each other one trip to rehab. And so what we said was, listen, the odds are against us, but if you happen to go out, we can stay together through one trip to rehab. And neither one of us had to cash in the trip to rehab card yet. So we just wanted to be upfront with each other and to know that, you know, we still have to take this thing seriously. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. As far as the rest of the reading goes, you know, when I talk to guys that I sponsor and things get particularly hard, I think the book is very clear on this topic. It says, if these things are particularly troubling, we best go work with another alcoholic instead of banging our head against the wall, you know, trying to straighten out. If I could straighten out relationships just by trying really hard, you know, that would be a great trait to have. Or if I could straighten out your relationships just by thinking really hard, that would be a great trait to have, right? But instead, what we have is a kit of spiritual tools, and what we have is a program that's laid out very simply. We take inventory, and we find out what the problem is, and we work towards a solution. And when things become overwhelmingly difficult, we try to find another alcoholic to work with. And it doesn't seem like the correct answer. It definitely doesn't seem like what you need to do at that point. What you really need to do is text the person 400 times. Leave, you know, what you really need to do is like stalk them or sit near them at a meeting or like, you know. What you really need to do is like get a new tattoo or, you know, something. But instead, what the answer is in our program is we need to go help somebody who's suffering. And it's counterintuitive. It's counterintuitive. It seems like it will never work, but it's always the right answer. And it's important for me to be here this weekend to hear other people say that, and so that it's reinforced within me. And so if you're carrying the message, thank you. If you're speaking here this weekend, thank you. If you're just seeing the person here that looks uncomfortable or looks like they might not be, you know, quite with it, and you go talk to them and make them feel welcome, thank you. You're doing a great job, and it's great to see all of you here this weekend. Appreciate you listening to me talk.
Thank you, Dylan. And let's welcome our third speaker, Rachel, from Chicago, Illinois.
It's not gonna work out. Hi, I'm Rachel, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rachel.
My sobriety date is October 18th of 2007. And my sponsor's name is Alexis. And my home group is Young People's Big Book in Chicago on Sunday nights. It's really great. If you guys are ever there, you should come. So relationships. Thank you guys. I could relate a lot, especially to you, like every single word. I am a black hole of attention, and I have been ever since I was a little kid when my parents had my little sister. It started to go downhill. And I just want everybody to pay attention to me all the time, and it's never enough. I'm a chronic malcontent, and that's what my old sponsor told me, and I firmly believe in that statement. So every relationship that I've had, it's never enough, you know? And I too started out, you know, I drank because I couldn't talk to people. Mostly I couldn't talk to boys. I could talk to like my three friends, and the way that I wanted you to pay attention to me was I dyed my hair weird colors, I wore weird clothes, I dressed slutty, you know, I yelled really loud so that maybe you would look at me and maybe you would start a conversation with me, and that doesn't really work out very well because if you're not talking to somebody, they don't want to talk to you, and I didn't understand that, and that got me into a lot of strange situations. But anyways, so I had a lot of bad relationships before I got sober, and I really like to blame my shortcomings on those relationships, and that's not true. And I was thinking about that now, and I still have a hard time, you know, I'll blame, you know, my bottom on the guy I was dating at that time because he, you know, called me stupid and whatever, and he was, like, older than me, and, you know, I don't think he was good enough, you know, but the truth is that I didn't think I was good enough either, and I was stupid because I was smoking too much pot and, you know, doing too many drugs, and I didn't know right from left, you know, I was that dumb, and so he was right, you know. But you know, without the drugs, I'm smart and I'm nice and I deserve to be treated nicely. And that was one of the things that like I didn't know. It took me a really long time to figure that out into sobriety. So I dated a lot of crazy people. The people I dated got crazier as I got crazier. Then I got sober. Then I continued to make bad decisions. So my sponsor was like, you shouldn't date in the first year. And I was like, okay. And then I want to please everyone, right? So I liked this boy. And I said, hey, my sponsor says we shouldn't date in the first year. And he was like, great. I think we should do that, you know? And then I continued to flirt with him for the next, like, 3 months and sent mixed messages, you know, and got myself in a lot of pain because of it. So that was, you know, mistake number one. Mistake number two, I dated a guy in my sober house, so I wasn't managing it. I was living in it. It was still a horrible idea, and I still, you know, 13th sucked the shit out of that guy. And, you know, he relapsed. We dated for a while, and I feel like I was the closest I was to relapsing at that point because all I could think about was this person, you know, and how much I wanted him to want me and love me and, you know, think about me as much as I thought about him. And he didn't, you know. He was sick. He was a newcomer, you know, and he didn't have anything to give me. So, you know, finally it came to that. It became very clear to me when he said to me on the phone, "I don't think about you." Like, ever. And I was like, oh, you know, so then, and I was also on my fourth column, on my fourth step, so that's a really great time to get into a relationship, right? Because you're in a lot of pain, you need something to, something else, you know, to fix me, somebody else to concentrate on, so that I don't have to concentrate on all the pain that I'm in, because I'm figuring out my part in all of my life, you know, so that ended. I did my fifth step. I made my relationship ideal. And my relationship ideal, it turns out, is like, I want communication. I want somebody to be nice to me. You know, I want somebody to pay attention to me and love me, you know, and be honest with me. And those are things I didn't know before, because I, too, wanted to be the cool girlfriend. I didn't want to have any feelings. You know, I wanted to be like, oh, you are friends with, you know, those five really beautiful ladies. Like, I don't care. And the truth is I care, and I'm nuts, and I can't, like, especially at Icky Pot. Like, I get overwhelmed, and I, you know, can't handle myself. So, like, I forget what I was saying. Anyways, so I did that. I had my relationship ideal. I ended up, you know, staying sober and not dating for a little while. And then I met my current boyfriend, who I also 13th stepped. But we've been dating for 2 years, so it's working out, I think. It is. It's great. It's really great. It's amazing, and I have these moments, you know, periodically where I'll be like, have we really been dating for 2 years? Has it really been 2 years? You know, like when you have an anniversary and you're like, how the fuck did I get, you know, like 3 years with no drugs? Like, really? Did I really get that? Did I slip in the middle? You know, and I'll have that same feeling with this relationship. And it's like completely amazing and a super miracle. And the key is like communication and working on my program and not working on his program. And keeping my friends, you know, as a separate entity, and continuing to work with newcomers, and continuing to, you know, when things get hard, we work with newcomers. So for instance, this is how my higher power works in my life. It's pretty great. So last night, I was having my Icky Paw freak out, where it's like, oh, there's a girl, and I'm convinced that, like, my boyfriend likes that girl, and he doesn't, because he likes me, and we've been dating for a really long time, and I should know that, but I am nuts, so I don't know that, you know? So I was talking to my friend, and she was like, I was like, I'm nuts, and this is the situation, and she was like, you probably can't talk yourself out of this. You know, you probably need to work with newcomers. And so we talked for a little bit, and I was like, maybe I can talk myself out of it. And then and she was like, yes, but this, like, thinking that you have going on, like, this argument that we had made against my case that, like, that my boyfriend liked this girl was not going to stick. Like, the feeling that I'm not good enough is going to come back, you know, always, because that's my alcoholism. And my alcoholism wants me to think I'm a piece of shit, so I go out and drink, and then I die, you know? And, my alcoholism is really good at that. So I was feeling bad, you know, trying to talk myself out of it, thinking, you know, how am I going to find a newcomer in Icky Pot? Like, I don't know anybody. And then a newcomer found me, you know. This woman who I had known from Chicago came up to me, and she's new, and we talked, and it was great, and she, like, saved my life, you know, because I had a purpose. I had something to do, that wasn't like obsessed about myself and what everybody else was thinking of me and how I'm, you know, not pretty enough, not good enough, not skinny enough, not whatever, and nobody's paying attention to me. You know, I all I had to do at that moment was pay attention to this woman and talk to her about my experience, strength, and hope, and sobriety. And it was great, you know, it really helped, it fixed it. And that's what, you know, my relationship looks like today. It looks like I'm really crazy, and I need to do a lot, you know, to not put all that crazy on this man that I'm dating, you know, because he doesn't need that, you know. He was trying to work his own program and keep his own head above water, and so I think that's all I have. I haven't talked for 20 minutes, but I guess, like, just communication is one of the key things. So I have more. I lied. So my, you know, my first relationships were all about sex. Like, I didn't understand that, like, you were also supposed to be friends with the person you were dating. I thought it was just, like, we sleep together, and sometimes we talk, and we go to movies, you know? And that doesn't make me feel good, you know? That makes me feel like a, just a body, you know, just a whole. And I don't want to be like that, you know? But that's what I treated myself like. And it took me a really long time to realize that, like, that I'm not just that. Like, I'm a person, I have a brain, I have good things to contribute to the conversation, like, I'm smart, I can handle myself, you know, and I'm not just, like, a dumb girl, you know? And the relationship that I'm in, I think, is the first one that I've really, like, taken that to heart and worked that into my relationship. Because before, you know, I get so scared around people, around anybody, you know, I'm like, and I convince myself I have nothing to contribute to the world and nothing to give, that, like, then I don't have anything to give because I'm so consumed with self. I can't, you know, dig down and, like, find all the good stuff that's in there. And so I think that's why, you know, my relationship now has been so great, is because we became friends, you know, before we started sleeping together. And it's really important to have that foundation. And it's so weird to me that, like, I just didn't get that. Like, that was one of the things that was in my manual to life that wasn't in my manual to life, you know, that was in everybody else's. Like, everybody else knew, somehow you guys got that, like, you're supposed to be friends with people also, as well as maybe sleep with them, you know? And if you don't have that friendship part, that's not love. Like, that's not, you can't, it's not a relationship, it's a hookup. And I wanted so badly to just be cool, you know? Be cool with being slutty. And I am not cool with being slutty. Like, it does not feel good. You know, and I tried it, you know, for a while. it sucked. It made me feel just like a body and not like a person. And I, you know, in order to cope with that feeling, I had to use drugs and alcohol to, you know, so that I could get all the attention that I thought that I needed and not feel like shit. I think now I'm done. Thank you.